Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, May 13th. This is Jeff.
This is Craig.
And Chris.
And we almost have leaves on the trees. It's so exciting. There are these buddy things, and they're kind of like looking like mangled claw hands, and they're going to be leaves. Like,
snow's been gone for almost a week.
Almost.
Yeah. Could come back, though, so yeah. we're a little cautious.
There's a lot of rain.
Still ice on the lakes.
Yeah, yeah, so I moved the shovels out to the garage or out to the barn, but they're sitting just inside the door. They're not hung up yet on the wall for the summer. I still got to be able to get to them quick if we happen to get
Keep
that snowstorm.
Keep them handy.
Yep.
Yeah. So you take off, you leave the house in the morning, and it's a little chilly and a little rainy, so I've got, you know, rain jacket and jeans and boots, and then by the afternoon, I'm like, I could have flip-flops and a tank top on. It's kind of one of those seasons right now, I guess. That's probably nationwide, going on?
High in the upper 40s today, but it's going to be like 83 or 86 on Thursday, right, and then drop back down and be cold and crappy for the weekend again, and all that.
What do you do?
Enjoy the 2 weeks of summer we have coming.
It'll be Christmas soon. Relax.
Yep.
Is it all going to be bunched together this year, or is it a day here and a day there? Because I like it when it's all bunched together, at least.
2 weeks of summer.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Sure
we'll
would.
See.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, that's what I thought we would do differently.
Okay.
Is I'll just start the show, and then we'll figure out what our topic is while we're in the middle of it.
Just gonna wing this one, huh?
Completely wing this one. But what we don't normally
do... That'll never backfire.
We don't normally tell our listeners that that's what we're doing when we do it.
Well, I'm not shy.
Yeah, because they can't figure it out either.
Right, yeah.
Because it doesn't sound like you're winging
last,
it.
This
doesn't sound planned.
How many
out
episodes,
at all.
Yeah. How many years have you guys been doing this?
Sure, yeah, it's been a ton. It's been somebody must not be paying attention because we're still doing it.
Well, if we were getting a pension from this, we'd be ready to retire pretty soon, I think.
Pretty nice. So.
Yeah.
I definitely could make a lot more money donating plasma, I'll tell you that much.
We don't do it for the money, we do it for the glory.
Yeah. So let's try Jeff's way.
There we go.
So, unfortunately, I'm going to need you to kick it off, at least to start the conversation.
Hold it. This was my idea. I don't want to be responsible for
it. The idea guy. You kind of has to.
No. The idea guy? Son of a gun. All right. we are in the middle of taking applications for a firefighter's position right now.
Sure.
How it worked out this way, I'll never know, but we haven't had an opening for 3 years.
Really?
Yep,
never guess that.
2018.
Wow.
Was when we did our last process. And at that time, we were still in the mode of doing a process every 2 years, developing a new hiring list that works for 2 years and replacing it. If you hired a lot of people, maybe you'd have to do it sooner. But otherwise, every 2 years like clockwork. We always did in September of even-numbered years. And there we go. And at the time, we had 18 applicants. Back in 2018, we're a small department, two stations, 33 line personnel, and four office folks. And so we had 18 applicants that we cleared to come in and take the test, which was a pretty small number for us. Normally we would have over 50, and then we'd get about 45 that would show up and actually take the test, and then we'd whittle down interviews. So we thought, this number's a little small, but gosh, that's still more than enough for what we're going to have for openings. And of those 18 that were cleared to come in and take the written test, and actually confirmed that they were going to come take the written test, only six showed up the day of. Right. And so, first of all, we reserved much too large a room. and secondly, we only paid for the tests that we physically opened. So that part was good. And actually, that's kind of a funny side story. One of the first questions people will ask me about if we're changing something in the hiring process, so it's cheaper if you don't have to do this test, or you have to do that thing, it costs more money. It's like, that really doesn't matter. That's kind of like the last consideration we have on our minds. But anyway, six showed up to take the test, freaking out the whole time the test is going on. Where the heck is everybody else? This is it. This is ridiculous. But So then we interviewed all six. Why not?
Yeah.
And of the six, five of them turned out to be candidates that we felt we'd be happy to hire. So didn't know where this is going to lead moving down the road.
Yeah.
And I mean, it took 3 years to think about it. And luckily, in the last 3 years, the job market has improved, and there are more and more people waiting for those jobs. Or, no, it's gone the other way, I guess. And so we were really concerned about this, and our police department had just recently done a hiring process, and for the first time ever, they used the same testing vendor for their new applicants as we've used. For the first time ever, they decided to temporarily suspend their written test as part of the police department entrance requirements. And in the state of Minnesota, you have to have already completed 2 years of education and skills training at a state-approved institution, basically, to be able to get a job. So it might work differently in other states, but they found that the last couple rounds of hirings that they've done, the written tests weren't predictive of the candidate's success once they got on the job. And the police department is different. You get to find out how your personality meshes with the real job when you get there. It's a little bit like EMT training. You go through EMT class, great, you're ready to save the world. You go out on your first couple of medical calls, and you go, holy crap, this didn't get me ready to do anything. This is not even like the class at all. And you find out that, no, the real world is a little bit different. And so they found it wasn't helping them, and it was slowing down the process, and they were losing good candidates to other cities when they had people that were applying in multiple places. So they decided to suspend their written entrance test for the first time, and not permanently, just temporarily, and see how that works. And I got that shared with me about a week before we opened up for our current job openings. And the idea just, well, first of all, I thought it was crazy, and my mind wouldn't turn off for the next 4 hours about how does this work? You can't, this is public safety, this is government, you have to do written tests, you must do oral interview, must do, you know, it was really messing with my head. And then I've thought about the other interview panels I've been on in the city of Moorhead for other departments where this is crazy, but that you just turn in an application and your credentials and you come in, you do an interview. It's I don't even know how it works, how they narrow things down by looking at your skills and your work experience and then picking a small number of folks they want to interview. And my brain short-circuited a little bit and said, maybe we need to change our approach because we just don't have 50 or 100 people waiting for the next opening that we have. And I competed with no less than 300 people at a time in the Twin Cities down in the 90s when I was looking for jobs. So we made the decision to temporarily suspend our written test as well. And we are just taking applications. We are scoring their work experience and their education certifications and inviting the top however many we feel we could interview in that day to the interview, and we're going to see how it goes. And yeah. I didn't really just about get run out of town on a rail, but I didn't generate a lot of fan-friendly content from the folks back at the fire station about this because I was perfectly honest with them and shared a week ago, I was not prepared. If you would have told me we should do this and there's a good reason for it, I would have laughed at you and told you to get the heck out of the room. This is ridiculous. But as I thought about it, the written test didn't do anything to narrow the field of candidates from those six people that we had that actually showed up that day.
And maybe you don't need to narrow a pool of six candidates.
Right. Right.
You know, Jeff and I were talking about this a little bit earlier this evening before the show, because that's what we thought we'd do tonight, is talk about some new ideas and different approaches to hiring processes, because obviously with today's job market and drastic change in the last few years, it's got us rethinking a lot of this. And I look at in Fargo, we did the same stereotypical, every 2 years we do a test and make a big list and all that. And a few years back, our chief looked at it and went, that's just not reactive enough. We need to shorten that timeline. So we went to 1 year. And at the time, it was like, wow, we're going to test every year. That's really quick. That's often. It's frequent. We're really keeping up. And now it's kind of funny. You look at it now, and after a few years of doing it, we're actually in this job market at a point where we're hiring so many people. We have a lot of retirements. Competition is tight. We're actually reevaluating now not only that timeline, but everything else. And so it's just funny. It's not funny. It's a little bit scary to look at. For decades, the fire service has done this. Every 2 years, we do a big test, and we make a list, and then we hire from it for the next 2 years. And we changed ours a few years back. I don't know, 5-6 years, maybe not that, 4 or 5, I don't know, something like that. Years ago, we went to 1 year, and at the time, like I said, it was, wow, this is crazy. And now we're looking at the 1 year going, that's not even maybe responsive enough. And you're looking at getting rid of the written test. And so I guess what I was hoping to do tonight is kind of get a few opinions here on the different segments, because when you look at the fire service hiring process, it is so long and it has so many steps, and some of those steps are necessary, but they're very time consuming. So when you have a market that's this hot, it's difficult to keep people sitting on a list for even a few months, let alone a year or 2 years.
And we're seeing that too. Craig and I are just seeing that on our department. You know, we took the test. When was the test? Last fall, maybe?
Yeah, last, you know, yeah.
And we had a large, for us, it's a large class of 6 people that came in into our organization. It's a 10-week training academy, 14 or 4 weeks of EMT, all those things that normal people do. But then we all of a sudden we needed to hire some more, so we looked to hire 4 more. So now it's 6 plus 4. We're 10 deep in our list, and we had, in that time frame, 2 or 3 people that turned us down because they had found another job. I'm not sure if it's a fire job or a regular, different job out in the regular job, grown up job, out in the community. You know that that paid them more or it better suited their needs. So we're already almost exhausted our list in less than a year.
Well, and I think that's another factor is looking at this. I have a cousin who works in L.A. County, so they're on the other end of the spectrum when you look at the size of your organization. And he was talking about the classes they're running and so forth. They're running, obviously, classes constantly through the year, big classes. But they also have personnel that's what they do is they work. That's all they do. And so you look at it, it's difficult for us in our size in that we typically made a list of 15 people for a year, and now we're exceeding the 15 annually. And that's where I'm going with the year isn't frequent enough for us. So now that we have to do more hiring and we're running more classes, it actually is pulling us away from a lot of the other work we normally do. So we would, in the past, you'd take a month or two every 2 years, and that's you'd focus on hiring and put a lot of time and effort into all the steps and all the process. And then we went to doing it once a year, and now we're starting to, and we don't have personnel that just do hiring. So it pulls a lot of us away to do the organizing, the scheduling, the interviewing, the agility testing, all that stuff that goes into it, all those separate pieces, the background checks. Okay. It takes more and more time, and we're doing it more and more frequently. So we used to run 1 class a year for the most part. And then we got to where we're running 2 recruit classes or academies a year. And now we're running 3 for the first time ever in Fargo. And that basically means we have recruits in academy the whole year. So we have to have instructors designated just to that academy. And then on top of it, when you start looking at people that do the backgrounding, those people then are backgrounding constantly through the year, not once, and not once every 2 years. So it's having an impact, I think, on us in a lot of ways that I don't know if the bigger departments are feeling it. I'm sure they're seeing the tighter job market to an extent, but they have some of those resources. And so I get the feeling, and maybe I'm dead wrong, that it maybe is hurting. It's harder on the smaller departments, because now the other thing the smaller departments are competing with is with all the big departments doing all the hiring.
Right.
You, in a lot of cases, you have bigger salaries, bigger cities. It's easier, bigger pool,
bigger numbers,
more attractive. Yeah. And so, how do you attract more people to these smaller communities, smaller areas?
When you've got a smaller department like mine, we don't have the luxury of having the staff to do a training academy. So we were just kind of looking at that and realizing that you added a person to your training division this year.
Yep.
But with the turnover that you've had, I mean, essentially you've added a full-time person to do the right. training academy, even though it might not just be one person's job, but that, you know, you've right. just about got one FTE dedicated for the whole year into the training now. So you added that position, and maybe it regained some of the time that your other training staff are doing that, but my goodness, they are just...
We ate it up already.
They're in the training
academy. That's what happened is we brought them in because we had some other things we wanted them to start being able to do, and we basically ate up that position because it's minimum. In most cases, we need two instructors a day, and we're partnering with our neighboring department to do this, so they bring in a training officer too. So we have four total being able to do this. We can typically most days have two instructors for the new recruits in the academy, and then that gives one or two for all of our regular training for all of our incumbent personnel, which that has to go on and continue going on through the year too. But that's what we ran into is we added this position thinking, all right, we're going to be able to take on a little bit more stuff. There were some projects that related directly to training that we really wanted to be able to take on and help with, and now all of a sudden the hiring and training jumped up, and so now that person, that FTE, just like you said, got eaten up into that. So now we're...
But that's going to ebb and flow, right?
Yep.
So in Fargo, we're opening a new station next year, or early 2024, and we'll be hiring 15 more individuals. So that's, you know, that's a large academy. That's on top of everyone else that's coming and going. Retirements, change of jobs, etc., promotions, added positions, you know, those things. So that's going to tax it. Now, after that, maybe we get back to normal. I don't know. You know, we'll see.
I'm curious to see that because we're not even in the hire. We're not up staffing yet for our new station. We haven't even started that, and we're already at this point.
We're chasing.
So we're not even up staffing. Yeah. And the chief looks out and plans on this and looks at how many retirements we have, but there are... More of our younger people are leaving for other opportunities. Some of them in the fire service. I think a lot of it, there are more full-time fire service opportunities out there.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it. But they're going back home. Their spouses are getting jobs. The reasons are different. They're not leaving for one reason, at least from what we're seeing. So then you couple that with retirements, and then you have that on top of it. And again, we have an up staff. So looking at the next two years are going to exceed what we're doing this year. But just like you said, it might level out in a couple of years. And that's kind of what our retirements show is. Our retirements will come back down a hair. But I wonder, we've just hired how many 30, 40 young people that they might not be thinking, I'm going to stay here for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then if that continues to turn over, we're going to continue to see, I think, just kind of that constant hiring process. But I don't know.
One thing we've been able to rely on up to this point is being able to get pre-trained personnel. And smaller departments tend to rely on that. Working with paid-on-call volunteer departments, part-timers, people who are looking to relocate so that you can get folks in, go through a relatively short orientation period or training in time, and then place them on shift and have them do training through their company officers, their shift commanders, and mentors. And I'm not sure if we'll be able to do that a year from now. I'm not sure if there will be a large enough applicant pool to draw people who have even a small amount of paid-on-call experience to come in to say, you know enough not to get in trouble, now we can teach you how we do things.
Sure.
So that's a concern we have for the future. Right now, it's panning out okay. But in the Fargo-Moorhead area, we opened two new stations between the other two career departments that are there, and you have the regular turnover. And does that kind of dry up the application pool?
Sure.
From where we have it? And just consider that everybody else is doing the same thing. So we're drawing from students down in the Twin Cities metro area as well as from in our area, and then transplants that are scattered across the country. And so, yeah, I really have a concern about where our future applicants are going to come from, that we might be down to trying to figure out, how do we train somebody from the ground up?
Right.
How do we join into academies? And we have to commit time to joining into this and saying we're not going to get pre-trained personnel anymore on a reliable basis. So we have to be able to start them from the ground up.
Like I think that's where it's going to go. I think that's what you're going to see. That was one of the adaptations we made, was we started doing EMT in-house a few years ago.
Yeah.
And part of it was because we wanted to compress the class and get our folks on shift fully qualified quicker. And so we started doing that in-house. And come to find out now, a couple other of the full-time departments in, I'm going to say, the region have experienced that their EMS, their hospitals are not doing EMT classes anymore.
Right.
And so now they're looking, where can we do EMT classes? So when you talk about this, Jeff, and what I'm hearing from fire, again, in the region, and I'm generalizing, but the region tech school fire programs are running very low on students, to put it mildly, from what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in the, yep, they're not doing EMT classes here and here and here. Well, now, just like you said, your qualified pool just dries up.
Yeah, your feeder programs are
trying. And so then it forces us to get to adapt and get a little bit more creative. And I think that's where we have to partner with other agencies and start pulling these programs together and working together, but also start getting creative with, like I said, we just started doing EMT class in-house.
You know, there might be some interesting correlations to the ebb and flow in other trades as well. If you think about auto mechanics, if you think about plumbers, electricians,
right,
that when labor markets are full, you know, and it's hard to find the jobs, programs excel at technical colleges and other institutions so that you can try to get your leg up and be as qualified as possible. And as the demand is greater and greater for these jobs, the school programs start to dry up. They start to shut down in colleges and universities. But yet you need people. Now you don't have to train people. And so then groups of employers get together and start doing their own in-house trade training or doing,
right,
you know, the on-the-job training programs and so forth. And is that kind of the fire service going down that same road of saying, now that the feeders aren't here, we might have to train our own? And some of those programs, they draw attention from other employers as well, too. So a big plumbing firm in a bigger city is running people through their trade program that they've put together. And smaller companies are saying, hey, can we buy in on this with you? We've just hired a person that we need to run through that as well, too. And so talking about the hospital program drying up their EMT, you might see public safety agencies that are doing this because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get other folks that have ancillary needs that are coming in saying, could we join in with this? Because the hospital-based program isn't training anymore. The technical college EMS program is shut down. We need to get these people trained and hired. And I only have one or two here. I can't run my own class, but that's what we need on this local rural ambulance right now. I've got two people. I just need to get them cycled in. What do I do?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the future looks like, you know, when it comes to those things. I know, like, I know some individuals that are going through diesel mechanics right now at the tech school, and companies are paying for their school, you know, so they pay for their 2 years of diesel mechanics, and then they just go work for me for 4 or 5 years. I got a guarantee 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
The child gets an education, they get an employee, and maybe that's something that we start doing. I don't know. We send kids through fire class.
That's definitely an interesting idea. I never thought of that before, but you're right. How do you compete if others are paying for their folks to go to school and we're still making them pay to go to school?
Right.
Are we going to be able to compete?
Well,
in the long run?
For you in Fargo, when somebody's going through your training academy, they're a City of Fargo employee, aren't they?
Correct.
So you are doing that in Fargo.
Yeah.
You're hiring them,
but
and you're paying them to go through training.
They're 21 years old,
yeah,
at a minimum. So now if we start looking at, you know, pulling an 18-year-old.
And they have college credits.
College goes, you know, send them to college, get a two-year associate's degree in firefighting or something like that, and then they come work for us. I don't know. Those are just spitballing ideas out there. But how do we recruit more people is the biggest question.
Yeah.
How do we get those numbers up,
right? And that's maybe something slightly different. You're paying them a training wage while they're going to school, stipend, or you're paying their
tuition. It's all thought, I guess, just throwing
no
around,
but it's yeah, good thought. And I think we need to get creative, and that's even Jeff started out talking about getting rid of the written test. That's one of the things we've been talking a lot about lately at the staff level, and also we have a recruitment committee, we have a training committee, and we're having those discussions too. Looking at every aspect of our process, so looking at the written test, and we're moving to a computer-based testing system that we're letting, for the first time, instead of bringing everybody into one big room on one day to test, we're going to let them schedule, once their application comes in, if they meet the qualifications, they come in, they schedule a time with HR, there's different dates and times they can choose from, and part of that's to make it easier for them, make it... again, to attract applicants, get more applicants, instead of us making them jump through the hurdles, we're trying to make it easier, the whole process. And that's the application they can do online. The written test, yeah, they still have to come in and do the written test on a computer at a scheduled time, but we're looking at maybe being able to do that online so they could do it virtually. And then the other thing that we're looking at is our agility test, trying to make that maybe more that same kind of thing where they can choose from a selection of dates and times, sure, instead of one exact date. And that's the one time they have a family wedding or they can't get off of work or whatever, make it more flexible for them. But then the other one Jeff just mentioned too that we've started talking about, we haven't moved any direction on it yet, is do you start doing interviews virtually too?
Right.
That is the next step that we're adding into this. And I'm not sold on the no written test, which is the weird thing to say, to be here talking about we're temporarily suspending the written test. We feel we need to. We're going to see how this works out. But you have to buy into doing that unless you find out there's a problem with it. But I am bought into the idea of being able to do distance interviews as well. And it came from being on a city interview panel where that was done. And I walked into it feeling that this is, I think it was sort of pre-COVID, during COVID they've been doing all sorts of stuff like this.
Right.
But I felt, I really don't know how this is going to work. I can't see how this is going to be meaningful, but hey, their department, not mine, so we'll see how this goes. And I was shocked to find out that the interviews for that department were just as well done by Zoom as they were in person, and that really shocked me. I didn't think you'd get enough cues from body language that you wouldn't make a connection over that distance platform to be able to feel like you're getting to know somebody. And I thought, oh, it was going to be like a cheesy TV interview or something like that, but it was actually almost as effective as being in person, and I didn't expect that. So I found it was just as valuable. You've got a feel for when somebody's being truthful or maybe not, when they're making things up, when they're not.
How do you know if they even have pants on?
I don't know that.
Stand up.
We all theorized, hey, on question so-and-so, did it look like they were Googling that answer? It's like, yeah, their attention was turned away just slightly, and I think they had a screen off calendar, and they were typing something kind of down below and trying to make it. But everything else seemed genuine. So it's funny, all the different cues that came out.
I think
what's 145 times 283?
I think COVID is. I mean, obviously technology is, advancing quickly. COVID forced some technology. There's kids went to college online. Online school's been around for a while.
Yeah.
So those things are out there. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't take advantage of them.
Well, no,
I think there's some kids out there that have never had an in-person interview. They probably just have been a Zoom or a GoToMeeting or something.
Well, and Jeff kind of said this a little bit ago when you made the comment that you first heard about it and then you couldn't stop thinking about it for 4 hours. And it's kind of hit me that we're kind of in this one show, we're talking about 3-4 different solid bore fog nozzle type questions that the fire service, I'm sure, is going to be highly divided on.
Yep.
And like Jeff said, he doesn't know where he falls. And I'm trying to feel this out where I fall on it and why. And that's part of why I can't stop thinking about it. So the written test, and do you do it? Don't you? If you do it, is this all right on a computer and we can schedule dates and times and make it easier for people? That I feel comfortable about. That's not as big a leap.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also looking at interviews. Do you have to do them in person or do you do them virtually? And part of me is going, you say, yeah, we prefer to do them in person, but virtual is an option if that's what you prefer or that's easier for you. And again, it's us maybe getting out of our own way because the fire service traditionally, again, this is me making fun of myself too, but people have always come to us. It's kind of funny. I think law enforcement's laughing at us right now because they've had to intentionally recruit for years, and they're going, finally, you guys have to too. And that's what we're running into is we just sat back for years and went, yeah, we'll test every couple of years, and we get a couple, 200-300 applicants every damn time.
You're lucky.
We didn't have to do anything.
Yeah,
you call up HR and go, yeah, put the ad in the paper, and we'll take the 300 applicants we get. And now we can't do that anymore.
Right.
And so it's forcing us to think a lot more about this and put a lot more effort into it than we have before.
I'm curious to know what everyone else is going through. from NYP.
And what are the ideas? Yeah.
To
what are they doing?
County to Morehead Fire. What's everyone doing right now?
And the other thing is the speed of change. Because the things you're talking about, Jeff, is, you're going, last time you did this was 3 years ago. But really, in the last few weeks is when you've gone to, we're going to skip the written test and we're going to do virtual interviews. Yeah. And the way we're talking in Fargo is very similar in that I see this dramatically changing over the next year. In a one-year period, I could see us having a very different testing system than what we had. Yeah.
It's going to change it in a couple of weeks.
You're
blowing my mind. That doesn't make
crazy.
Any sense.
We went into this, and the idea of doing virtual interviews hadn't even entered into my consciousness, even though I'd been a part of a process that way, until maybe 3 days after the applications were open. Somebody asked, well, are you going to let people interview over Zoom, or they still have to come in and do interviews? That was the pro-Zoom person. You could obviously tell by the tone of my voice. And I said, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And the person I got, though, you're a dummy, kind of looked back and said, no, really? This has been moving fast. We had an opening, and within a week, we had it posted, all the stuff put together. And normally, it takes us a month of putting all this stuff together and all the timelines, making sure we got everything totally perfectly laid out. So, and all the personnel lined up to do the different tests and interviews and all that kind of stuff before we're ready to post anything, so we don't want anything to be wrong. And since all we had to do is get at least three people on an interview panel, pick a date, boom, we can post the job. But when they asked that, the thought hadn't occurred to me yet, that we would do anything other than in-person interviews. I said, I guess I don't know. I hadn't thought about that, but other departments are, other departments are doing it that way. I said, I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but I hadn't really thought about it. And then as the first few applications came in, it became clear to me, we're going to want to be able to do distance interviews.
So it's
fine to interview somebody from, I'll pick a random state, Kansas, and say, there's a firefighter with experience, with education in Kansas that I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get back to Minnesota, you know, because I don't know what their life circumstance is. Why would I force them to drive from Kansas all the way over here to get an interview if they're in a pool of 8 to 10 really highly qualified people that we want to look at first? And if we don't find who we're looking for in a first round or to fill enough openings, that doesn't mean we can't drop further down in the application pool and continue on.
So we just talked about, you know, when I took a test 30 years ago, it was 300 people got together at the Civic Center and filled out the little dots and you prayed that you scored high enough. Now we're in a time where we're competing for employees.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we not do some of these things to make it easier? So this individual from Kansas, like you said, that wants to be maybe come up here, you said you got to be up here on Tuesday the 18th, and they're like, I'm not driving up there.
Yeah, I got school, I got work.
I got life, I got life in my way, I can't do it. You just lost that candidate, right?
Yeah.
So
we're
competing for candidates out there, so we have to do some different things.
Well,
our HR department said one other thing to me as well, too, which it's coming back to me now, and my brain is starting to short circuit a little bit. And they said, well, what are your other days that you're willing to do interviews? I said, what do you mean other days?
What are you talking about? Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, you've got the one day that you want to do most of them. If you've got two or three that can't make that day, you're okay with alternate dates, right? Because we're doing that all the time. That's one too many. I can't handle that. And I blocked that out of my mind again, because what if we extend out, we want to do interviews with this panel, and you get two people that you're really interested in, but they say, I just can't make the interview that day. We're already willing to customize time if they say, this is the time that we've assigned for you, but if that doesn't work, please let us know, and we'll try to work with you and pick a different time.
Right.
And now we might have to say, yeah, but we'll get the panel together, and we'll do another interview on Tuesday with you.
Right.
Now, that might mean that maybe you don't have 5-person interview panels anymore.
Sure.
That the interview panels are different, or you make other accommodations, or your panel meets via Zoom to do the interview with the dude if it's outside of the normal group.
But the whole thing is making this, it's about making it more flexible for them. And the other thing is the elephant in the room right here, too, is diversity.
Yeah.
I'm going to come right out and say it. We have a massive diversity issue, to understate it, and we need to address that. And one of the ways you address it is by making it more flexible.
Right.
You're not making the process easier. The process still has the same standards to get through it and be successful. But what you're doing is allowing people to work it around their life. So work schedules, school schedules, etc. I remember years ago, decades ago, applying at a department where they did the, just like we've traditionally done, one date, this is when we're doing the written mm-hmm. test. This, and we had a very close family member getting married out in California. We already had plane tickets by the time this came out. And I called, and I remember calling going, is there any way I can take this any other time? I'll do whatever. And they're like, nope, I guess you just got to choose what's more important to you. And, I, and I'm sorry, excuse my French, but it's kind of like, yeah. screw you. That really, yeah. and so now I'm on the other side of the fence.
Right.
And not purposely doing that to people. That's the system we have. But we are now looking at addressing that and going, oh, you have a wedding that weekend? Well, you can do it this weekend. Okay. Oh, okay, great. Thank you. And you get those applicants that you otherwise would miss because we've been so, again, the traditional fire service, you come to us and we get hundreds of applicants and then we'll sit and
we can't.
Our process has been so focused on eliminating yeah. people because we've had so many applicants. Now we're in the opposite boat where we don't have the applicants. Yes. Yeah. And we need to be more flexible and keep up with modern times. And we're doing that. We're having these conversations. Yeah. We're making these changes. It's exciting. It's just kind of crazy how all of a sudden it's happening really fast.
The older generation needs to start looking at it differently, right? So you're telling me you have Zoom interviews, so I can log in from wherever I'm at if I'm on the panel and do the Zoom interview with you, right?
Well, we haven't gone that far, let's go all the way, Jeff.
So yes, I can do it from my pontoon boat at the lake while I'm relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a thought, you know, I mean, just something different, too. Make it easier for everybody.
Well, and if we have to do a second round of interviews to get everybody we'd really like to get an interview, that probably has to be on the table. We might not be able to get all of our employees together a week after that on a Wednesday to do the last two follow-ups we're trying to fit in. So then maybe our panel isn't all together in the same room either.
I'm still locked in on some pretty robust background checks. I think that's important to us. And maybe that changes down my mind changes later, but I think background checks is because of the community trusts us to go into their house, trusts us to go into their business, that we need to hire them.
Well, and that's another
right people. But eliminating the written test doesn't tell me if he or she is trustworthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we do the other steps.
So that's the other half of this. So that's where I'd like to. I don't know how much time we have left here, but I'd like to put the other half on or the other part of what we have left on that, because we started doing informational classes for people that might be interested in applying and learning about what's the job. They have misconceptions, so we bring them in. We do a class on the schedule, the benefits, the pay, the job. What do you really do as a firefighter? How do you spend your days? You look at a fire station. You look and see the equipment. And one of the things we talk about in there is, again, the hiring process. We know what it is because we work in it, but most people are not familiar with a process where you wait a year or two to apply, and then you apply, and then you wait a month, and then you get to go take a written test. And then if you do well in that, you wait another month, and then you get to go do a agility test, or you do an interview, and then you wait a month and do the other one. And then if that all went well, you're 3, 4, 5, 6 months plus the years you waited to apply into this, and then we go, we're going to put you on a list now. Right. And we probably will hire maybe in the next year. Who knows? We'll see here. And in our case, we've been doing a couple classes a year. So I remember last summer, fallish, telling the candidates, the people in the class, yep, so if you do really well through this, we're going to be getting a hold of some of the first ones of you December, January. Right. Which, I mean, that's still half a year away. So we talked about the process part. And that it's getting people used to how long is this process, which that's where I'm kind of looking at. Are there ways we can shorten this, make it at least more flexible, keep people involved? But the other piece of it now is, the other piece that takes a long time is you bring people in, you give them a conditional job offer, and now you start backgrounding.
Right.
So what do you do for backgrounds, and how long does that take?
Yeah, and it varies, right? So
very much.
So we bring them in for conditional job offers, then they immediately go and get their fingerprints taken, and that gets shipped off. Mm-hmm. We don't have a timeline for that. It's like we're at the mercy of someone else, right? So we've seen it back in a week and a half,
mm-hmm.
and seen it back in a month. So you're kind of waiting on some mm-hmm. of that. And then you have to have an individual, and I do this for our department, but I get online and start doing background checks, right? So I get on the local state of North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota. If they're from another state, I get on their websites, start looking for any background information that I can find, criminal or traffic type stuff. And then you got to do social media stuff. Then we have to do all these other things, make some phone calls. We actually still do home visits. We go out to their house, no matter where they live. We go out there and meet with them. And it's kind of a good thing because we get to visit with them and their spouse and their kids and talk about the job a little bit too.
I want to take applications only from Colorado Springs and Hawaii.
Right. No kidding. Yeah, the chief hasn't. We haven't had anybody from Hawaii. We'll see. I'll push that one when I fly to Hawaii to visit.
Just be randomly calling Hawaiians. Hey, yeah, I need you to fill out an application.
Could you apply?
Yep. I don't care. You don't want the job.
Firefighters from Hawaii. Throw your application and I'd love to come visit.
I'll pay you $500 if you just apply.
Mostly January through March so it is a long process.
So you've talked kind of about three things there. Yeah. You talked about a criminal background,
yeah.
So state, federal, then you talked about a social media background, yeah. We do our own in-house background on that, and then a home visit. So there's three more steps,
yeah.
And that's not even close to the whole background piece. For what we do, so
that now we've already you're talking months.
Yep, and so then we
after
throw
we've
in
almost offered you a job.
Yeah, and then we throw in the physical, the psych,
polygraph. Medical,
the polygraph. So that's what we do.
The problem, the one thing that I see though is we are still getting good candidates.
We are
with the process.
Yep.
Now we have to be ready to adapt for future stuff, and like Jeff's talking about, Zoom meetings and Zoom interviews, those things like that. Craig's talking about testing online at your convenience, those things. So that's good, but we're still getting good qualified candidates through the process. The process is working.
It is.
So I hate that's where you get hung up about not doing a written test. That's where you get hung up about not doing it on a computer at some random time, not at the same time.
But they are different. That is different from having entrance requirement standards that you're adhering to. Now, whether it's needing so many college credits to be able to apply, whether it's needing to have certain fire service certifications before you apply, or being able to pass certain types of background checks, medical, physicals, those things still ensure quality candidates until you start breaching the wall where, hey, this isn't working for us. And maybe you don't have to necessarily address those. Because a high
so the bar. Fear, the fear we're having, the fear is a change. One, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do need to adapt to current modern trends. But my fear would always be if I skipped. I'm not going to do your social media background check. We're not going to do that. We're going to speed this baby up. And you found the wrong candidate. Where's your answer?
Yeah.
So, and I'm 100% for changing the way we do things. I'm 100% for modernizing. And being hip, this is old guy, hip with the times, doing those things that they can do things that make it easier on us and the candidate to get us into the department.
And I think
I'm leery.
That's where my focus has been is exactly because of that is let's adapt the process but not kick anything out.
Right.
Because that's an easier, I don't have to make a decision on why I think this, we don't need to do this or I think we do. The first part of the process that we've talked about is there's more flexibility in there. And do you need to do this? What does it give you? What does it provide you about the candidate? Where the background check is a background check. So in a lot of cases, the more thorough you can be, the better off it's going to be. But do you also reach a point where you get too many candidates coming in too fast that you cut those pieces back? I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, so the ideal world is you never have to cut that back. But I think if you looked at other departments, I'm sure there's some that do even more than we do, and there's quite a few that probably do less.
There are probably other public sector organizations that have to do the same kinds of things, as well as some private sector jobs that have to do that. And maybe they're not doing it the same way that we do it. Maybe they're contracting out other services that can do these either so that we're not burdened with that time frame or that can do things in a much more efficient manner than we can. And maybe they're able to get the same kinds of results back in 2 weeks versus 30 days.
So, yeah, so the job is part of the job has been given to me. But that was added on top of my normal battalion chief duties. So I'm chasing them. So I was visiting with my wife about this subject, about background checks. She's always asking me, what are you doing? Where are you going? She works in HR for a government agency, and they hire it out. They pay someone to do the background checks for them. Mm-hmm. That's a cost, right? They're already paying me, so it's easy. But it's a cost. So do you incorporate that cost in it to make those things go faster? There's professional people out there that do things like this that we always think we can do. Sometimes it's best to hire the professional.
Well, and that's
I guess fire. Call me.
Part of it.
You want to handle that? You handle that. That's your job. You know?
But having it in house also gives you a certain amount of depth to it, yeah, and inside view of it. So you kind of know a little bit more. You understand it better. It's that line between when is it too much and when isn't it. Right. That's again, the fire service struggles with it because that's the can-do attitude, and that's what makes us good at our job too. Because if you had people that were like, I don't know, I can't do it, well, they're not going to solve the problems that need to be solved on emergency incidents. Yeah. But we also then overstep and, oh, we can do it, we'll make it work, which again is a great quality that makes for great employees, that they're motivated, they want to work hard, they want to do the best and for the organization. Yes. But sometimes it does. We're trying to burn the candle at both ends, kind of thing.
So to kind of segue back to the beginning, everyone in our metro area is hiring people like crazy. Hopefully we have the candidates for it. Sounds like Jeff and Morehead Fire is adapting a little bit to make some changes. Fargo Fire is adapting. I'm assuming West Fargo Fire will adapt. And I think I'm kind of excited. We're going to have a lot of new individual people coming into the fire service. It's always fun to see.
There's a current job posting for the East Grand Forks Fire Department as well. Sure. And I noticed in their job application, it lists written test may be required. Candidates must pass a background check and complete an oral interview. And without talking to their chief up there, realizing you just look at that and you go, they're exactly where I was at when I wanted to make the posting and I wanted to make it optional, but I thought I gotta make a decision one way or the other. It's not fair to the applicant to say, well, am I coming in twice or am I coming in once or what's going on? But to see that, yeah, okay, there's another organization that's in the same boat we're in.
Right.
And if I placed random phone calls, I know that we're not the only ones, because I did just a quick search for job openings and found a couple other departments in the Chicago area that were actually touting lateral transfers, know this, know that. It's like, that's not happening around here, but like, they're experiencing the same kind of problems. And what are you trying to do? Get people who are mobile to fill those job openings. So I don't like to use the word poaching exactly, so to speak.
Right.
But you're looking for people who say, yeah, I'm looking for a departmental change, or I'm looking to get back to closer to where mom and dad are.
Sure.
So that they can spend time with the grandkids. And so I'm looking to move from my job that's an hour away to one that's closer to here. So yeah, I know I got 5 years in with this department, but I'm willing to switch. And that whole idea of I'm a firefighter, but I'm looking to be a firefighter closer to where I want to be, outside of getting your first job and then trying to get back home, the idea of moving from place to place, it was just unheard of in the fire service. And I think we're going to see a whole lot more of that, particularly if it's within your particular state or within your particular retirement system, if you have one, to where
that's the other thing,
one place to another, what's the big deal?
It's the lateral transfers. You're going to start seeing, we already are seeing a lot more of that.
Right.
We've seen more than we've ever seen before, and it's not a dramatic number. We still have very low turnover when you look at any other organization or profession. We have very low turnover. But for us, it's high because we're used to losing nobody or maybe one person in a year.
Right.
So if we lose two or three, we doubled or tripled what it is. But we're seeing more of that, and the younger people are talking more from what I'm hearing. Their conversations are less about retiring here and collecting the pension. They're more, I'll work here for a few years, and whether I go to another fire job or I go into another profession or whatever I decide to do, that's more their attitude. It's a little bit more lighthearted, which I'm sure there's some good to it too, but it's not the way I kind of came through the system or the way I think. It's very different, but that's what I think. You're right, Jeff, we're going to see. And I think as you see the full-time fire jobs increase, yes, at some point I would think we'll go from we have too many jobs available to not enough at some point, which that'll impact it. But
Yeah. You know, when our city hires a building inspector, if they've been a building inspector for 3 years in another city and they're coming in with experience, they're not starting out at step one in the pay scale. They may not get the full credit for where they've been at because we don't know you. We got to try you on and all that. But everybody doesn't start out at step zero, depending on what you have. So why would it be any different in the fire service? Now, having 10 years somewhere else and then coming here, that doesn't mean you're going to start out same as a 10-year person here. And nobody would necessarily expect that either. But, yeah, we are open to looking at prior history and seeing what we need to
I think we're going to need to get used to people coming in for 4 or 5 years and leaving. Yeah. You talked about it with, okay, you pay for their schooling and then they work for you for 3, 4, 5 years and they can go do what you want. Right. We got what we needed. You got some experience, but we see our people right now. They're looking at all the other departments around. What do they make? What are they earning? And where do I want to live? And where do I want to work? And so they're making decisions based on a lot of that stuff. And right
always,
now, I think
you we're... You always heard people, I train these guys and all this money. And then they leave. So what? I mean, really, so what? I mean, you're going to be training people no matter what.
Like any business, there's a breaking point. So if you can keep them for X number of years, so maybe you get them to sign on and you go, okay, you sign on for this many years, then you...
Our breaking point was 30 years. You want to change that?
That's what No, it used to be 40.
It used to be 40, yeah.
Well, for the very first time, we opened up a fire captain's process. Oh, and I forgot to tell this little quick story. So we started putting together a fire captain's promotional process, which is now a promotional slash hiring process, almost 30 days before this opening came out for this firefighter's job. We're doing an assessment center first, then we're doing an interview panel, and then we're taking the top candidates from that and going on with a chief's interview with just the top two chiefs to kind of pick the perfect fit. And so 30 days after, we started setting all this up, getting all the dates, all the people, everything lined up, putting the stuff together. We get an opening for a firefighter spot, and we can move quickly because we're not doing a written test. So we are going to be doing the interviews for the firefighter's job and making a job offer before the captain's candidates can make it to the first interview panel. Which that's crazy that you know, because like you say, these processes normally take 2 or 3 months.
Show. Emotional process,
right? But the other thing is, for the very first time for a fire captain, we were required to open this up to the public.
Yeah,
go both internal and external. Decision of our city manager and how they do all the rest of the jobs. Can't really understand how these wacky police fire things work or what have you. Why is there special treatment here? And I mean, it's really painful to open up to the outside, especially for a first line supervisor. You know, when you've got firefighters who've been working up towards this and whatnot, I might have to compete with people in neighboring departments around if they figure, yeah, I've been waiting for a captain's job and I'll move to Moorhead. And now they don't have the opportunity to pick up jobs anywhere else either, because most fire departments do all of this internally today. How much longer is it before that's not the case? Because you're seeing people where they get trained in Fargo, but they might go to other places, typically for like a chief's level job.
Right.
We're used to seeing that. But what happens when all these jobs start opening up? That any supervisor's job, it's an internal external process. And so what if Fargo pulls in a person who got trained in Grand Forks and they might be a captain on an engine spot? I'm not saying that's ever going to happen. But then again, the stuff we're doing today, I didn't think was ever going to happen 6 months ago. And so what happens when the fire service becomes like every other job as far as hiring and promotions and transfers, and people can bounce from agency to agency and place to place around the country? I mean, it seems like that's where it's slowly heading, to the pain of all of us in our old dinosaur brains to try to work through.
Well, it's going to happen. We have 3 paid departments and their headquarters are within 10 miles of each other, right?
So, for an entirely different show. Why in the heck are there 3 different administrative bodies running these 3 organizations within 10 miles of each other? Totally different show. And I can tick off anybody else in my department who hasn't been ticked off today.
That was Jeff that said that?
Let's go for broke. Clean sweep.
So good. That's good conversation. I hope people out there try to filter through our conversation we've just had and think of some ideas for their own departments.
Yeah, think about it and share it with those in your department. I'm always open to listening and ideas. Again, we have a committee that works on this. We have the staff that works on this, a chief that thinks about it a lot. But we're always open to hearing ideas and thoughts on it. I'm always curious because I think something might be a great idea, and then you talk to a couple people and you find out maybe it's not. So I always like hearing from folks on what parts they think are good or valuable and what they aren't, because I'm a little bit removed from being a young person applying for a fire job. So what I think might not be reality. Hopefully we gave everybody some stuff to think about tonight. Yeah. Like I said, to me, there were a few topics in there that are like the solid fog nozzle debate, where you talk about written tests and agility tests and how do you do those. And we didn't even dive into that one, but then also the interviews and do you do them virtually? Do you do them in person? Does it matter? All that. Hopefully good discussion around the kitchen table.
I think so.
Yeah. Stay on the blogs and all the posting sites and all that. But, hey, get out to the Fire Academy. Consider getting out to FDIC next year and starting to mix and mingle in person and sharing these experiences, because when you meet up with live people, you find out that the things that are problems at home that you think are just your issues are just like always repeated all across the country in the fire service. So the things we're talking about right here today are affecting people in Texas, Florida, anywhere in the country. They're experiencing the same things, and that's what I found through personal experience.
I would love to hear if someone has the master plan.
Share it with Moorhead Fire first, and then I'll
the plan that works for everybody.
Share it with the other
please,
big players in the area.
Please write an article in Fire Engineering, because we'd love to read it. That would make my job a lot easier. Here's the plan.
There we go. We'll put a bunch of topic ideas in the hat, and we'll mix them all up, and we'll pluck one out at the beginning of the next.
Here's how you do it.
On Fire Engineering Talk Radio. But between now and then, stay safe. And, hey, we'll see you in 4 or 5 weeks or so.
Be safe. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.